Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero that I'm interviewing today is Alan Kornberg. Alan is the president of the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. Before that, he was the executive director at Farm Sanctuary, which is one of the biggest sanctuaries for farm animals here in California. And before that, he was a pediatrician and associate professor of emergency medicine and pediatrics. Welcome, Alan. I'm honored that you could join us today.
Well, hi, Yolanda. Thanks for the kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be here, and appreciate the kind words. Hero is way too strong, but I'm happy to be here and talk to you about our work, so thank you.
Yeah, well, your work is very important. So I want to start by asking you, how the heck did you go from being a pediatrician and being very involved as a pediatrician to the world of animal advocacy?
Yeah, I guess a little bit of professional ADD. So I've really had three careers. And so briefly, I was practicing pediatrician, both primary care and pediatric emergency medicine, joined the medical school faculty, did that work for a good number of years, got an MBA, and started doing a bunch of healthcare management work across the country, and enjoyed that, and so learned how to work in bigger systems and that sort of thing. And I've always been someone who cares about animals. When I was a kid, treating animals well was something that mattered to me, and I've been a vegetarian for around 30 years and vegan for maybe 15 years. I did some volunteer work with a number of animal charities over the years, and so a dozen years ago, I had a leadership role with a health plan for the poor in Massachusetts, and doing my thing, doing reasonably well, and I got an itch to dive in deeper in terms of protecting animals. And so I had an opportunity to be the U.S. Executive Director for World Animal Protection, which is a global animal charity, and subsequent to that, I became the Executive Director for Farm Sanctuary, which is the oldest and largest farm animal sanctuary in the United States, and maybe the world. So it sounds a little maybe half crazy or maybe fully crazy, but it really had some transitions along the way, and really had to do with my interest in helping animals who don't really otherwise have a voice to be part of that landscape as well.
Children fall under that category too, right? I mean, it seems like a pretty logical flow too.
I did general pediatrics, but I also did a good amount of child abuse work, and from the medical point of view, and so and those are children who can't speak for themselves, and so there may be something implanted in there someplace. I'm not sure, but I'm happy to be doing what I'm doing, and you know, if it helps, that's a good thing. So yeah, thanks.
Can you give us some background about the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, or GFAS as you call it? How did that get formed, and what is its primary purpose?
So Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, GFAS, started in 2007, so we're entering our or have entered our 11th year. It was founded by a number of leaders in animal protection, Mike Markarian from the Humane Society, Adam Roberts from Born Free, Kim Haddad, who's a vet with a great deal of both companion animal and wildlife experience based in the San Francisco area. And they all recognize, along with some colleagues, that there are many, many organizations around the world that call themselves sanctuaries, and some are genuine, true sanctuaries that provide high-quality care for animals in need, animals that need sanctuary, and some really aren't true sanctuaries, and people use the name and really are not treating the animals well or appropriately. And then there's this other section, if you will, of sanctuaries that are aiming to head in the right direction, but need to grow and need capacity building and need support to get to the next level. And so so GFAS was launched to really help sanctuaries help animals, our tagline. And so we are the only global organization that certifies sanctuaries. So if you are GFAS certified, you are clearly a high-quality, accredited, true sanctuary. And so we want to both identify for animal care and for donors and the public which sanctuaries are genuine, true, high-quality sanctuaries, and also help sanctuaries move along the way to go from good to great, or to go from all right to being really solid. And so it was founded to fill that need, and right now we have about 160 accredited sanctuaries around the world, and we aim to support sanctuaries. We're in the business of helping sanctuaries, and of course they're in the business of helping animals directly.
Do you do actual site visits, or how do you verify that these sanctuaries are true sanctuaries for the benefit of the animals primarily?
No, we do site visits. So there's a process. It's a reasonably lengthy process, and we try to have it be as efficient as possible for the sanctuaries. But there's initial telephone or Skype interviews. We then exchange paper materials electronically, typically, of course, nowadays. And then we'd have an experienced accreditation director or someone in country in some developing countries go on site and spend time on site. And so we pay attention primarily to animal care, of course, both general care and health care for the animals, which includes the right environment for the animals. For animals, number two, for animals that are potentially dangerous to people, we also ensure that public safety, human safety, is well protected and well maintained. And number three, and really the reason that most sanctuaries fail, we also provide support and accreditation on the sustainability business side. So we accredit and support and advise around policies and procedures, around finance, around land owning, around board and governance, all those sorts of things too. But the short answer is that we do go on site, but we do that after we've had an extensive review prior.
And speaking of providing that service of, you know, the business aspect of the sustainability, do you provide some kind of guidelines? Are there materials that one can download from your website or something that guide people on, you know, if they're about to start a sanctuary, for example, how to do it right?
Yeah, so we have guidelines and standards that are online and available on our website. It's sanctuaryfederation.org, or you can just Google GFES. And so there are guidelines and standards right there. And so just to make maybe a nuanced distinction, we have scientifically developed standards of animal care and also standards around sustainability and business that are useful for all. It's not entirely a how-to to go from having no sanctuary to starting a sanctuary from scratch. But one can infer a lot as one looks at our standards. There really are standards for existing sanctuaries. And so there would be standards, everything from the minimum three-dimensional enclosure space for species-specific to what's the minimum amount of financial reserves, how much cash in the bank a sanctuary should have to be sustainable, and everything in between.
Wow, that sounds really, really helpful. So I have a question, like, I've been traveling, you know, around the world, and I've visited places where we can interact with animals like kangaroos and koala bears. Is there a proper way to have people be holding koala bears or interacting with kangaroos? Is there anything in your guidelines about that? Like, what kind of detailed interaction, you know, is considered sanctuary and for the benefit of the animals?
Yeah, so it all for us, each animal is an individual, and the work that we do needs to be to ensure that each animal is treated properly and appropriately from its own perspective. And so in general, so there's lots of distinctions, but in general we frown on to don't allow human handling, you know, a visitor handling of animals. And of course there's some species specificity there. You know, if there are tours, the animals should always have an ability to get away of their own free choice so that they would be in an enclosure and they can move away. Obviously for dangerous animals there should be no contact. You know, no one should go in an enclosure with a tiger, but that's stating the obvious. Also for any animals that might be releasable, some animals in sanctuary, it's lifetime care. And some animals, depending on species, might get adopted or for wildlife, might be released back to the wild. And so as you can imagine, in general, for animals that are potentially releasable, it's a bad idea to have a lot of human contact because they might habituate and then, you know, be too friendly towards people and then be back in the wild, and that would shorten their lives. So our general standards are not positive towards public engagement with the animals in a handling kind of way. Some animal care organizations, you know, a chunk of their fundraising is based upon having the public engage with the animals. So one has to find a way that works for all. And in general, though, it needs to be about the animals and their ability to be in a safe space and not be put in the hands of people where that's not what the animal would choose.
Right. So going into a pasture where there are goats free roaming and they want to interact with you, that's fine. Or a pig, for example, giving the pig a treat and or petting it, as long as it can move away, that's still acceptable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so And so, because I had the honor of being executive director at Farm Sanctuary for a number of years, which is a wonderful, wonderful place. So I have, particular experience around farm animals. And I suppose one way that I could describe it would be, so there are companion animals, dogs and cats and others that, that live with us and benefit from human-animal interaction. There are wildlife who don't and should be left alone. And so farm animals in sanctuary are, sort of in between. They've been bred and habituated towards human contact. Of course, in animal agriculture, the contact is horrible. And on sanctuary, many farm animals, as you're alluding to, do appreciate and appear to enjoy being around people as long as they're friendly people and they've got to be guided by staff or experienced volunteers and just wouldn't have folks walking on their own. So as long as the animals are safe and appear to be enjoying the interaction and it's guided by experienced staff, the animal can move away. And also the people need to be safe, right? I mean, a goat can hurt you and a pig certainly can. So one has to be thoughtful about that too. But in the right circumstances for farm animals, a really good example and one that I'm obviously especially inclined to speak to, some interaction can be just fine. Yeah.
So the other thing I'm thinking about is as I've, traveled, there have been opportunities to pet a tiger or have your picture taken with a tiger or something like that. And of course, you would not condone a sanctuary doing that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
How these people
are doing that? Because, I've heard rumors that they are actually drugged, but I'm not sure, of course.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be a sanctuary at all. And so that's all about people making money off the animals. It's not about the animals' best interests. So there's at least two kinds of environments one can picture for that, a not uncommon one. And very common in the United States are tiger cubs. So, from near newborns to up to about 40 pounds. And so they are bred, and then folks pay a whole bunch of money to have themselves, their families, pictures taken with tiger cubs. And then, of course, you have to wonder what happens to those cubs as they grow older. And so, and the story is never good. And that's a money-making operation. And then, in some places around the world, and one doesn't have to be a super expert to appreciate this. First of all, it never makes any sense from the person's point of view to be an enclosure with a large carnivore, right? So that's, that's never smart, never safe. And the only way that could possibly happen would be if the animal is drugged or otherwise restrained. So nothing that we've just talked about is in any way, shape, or form for the benefit of the animal. And so any facility that provides that opportunity for people is not a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm. So on that theme, what are some of the things that the public can look for or that they should be aware of when they go and see a place that's called a sanctuary and they're invited to interact with animals?
So a few of our guiding principles, and I've talked a fair amount, number one, about public contacts. So it needs to be commonsensical on a species basis, and it needs to be something the animal is comfortable with. So like we said earlier, if there's a pig in a farm animal sanctuary and the pig is happy to be around a few people in a guided tour and the pig is getting a belly rub and enjoys it, that's fine. And it also encourages folks to eat less meat or not to eat meat at all, which is good for the species in general. So that can be a good thing. As long as the animal appears happy, it's a guided tour, it looks like a safe and comfortable place. There should never be people alone with animals. They should never be around wild animals. Wild animals shouldn't be handled by the public. So that would be, a core principle for us. A couple of other high-level principles for us around true sanctuaries. There should be no breeding. The problem is overpopulation. So with the exception of well-regulated breeding programs for endangered species, and it has to be government-certified, international treaty-certified endangered species breeding. Anybody else who's breeding animals, it's not a sanctuary because they're not doing that for the animals. They're doing that for their own financial benefit. And then also, third and related principle is that there should be no buying or selling of the animals. That animals should be rescued, should be saved to sanctuary, and the sanctuary should be supported by fundraising. And if animals are bought or sold, it's channeling money into the bad guys, not the good guys. And so that also is a, a guiding principle for us. I think also looking at websites can be very useful. And so if the website makes it sound like a place is making a bunch of money on showing off animals, or there's lots of human contact with wild animals, or there's one founding person who's being the hero and it's about him or her and not about the animals, I would think that that, you know, sends some messages about what the story really is, and it's not about protecting animals.
Okay, switching gears a little bit, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges that sanctuaries in general face?
So I think the biggest challenge that is pervasive across all sanctuaries, regardless of geography and regardless of species, is on the sustainability, capacity building, business side of things. Many sanctuaries fail, and they fail because they don't have enough money, they don't have enough reserves, they haven't built a board that's independent that provides good oversight and guidance, they don't have enough experienced staff, they don't own the property or have a long-term lease, they don't have a business plan and a long-term strategy, they don't have succession planning, so, you know, one person or a couple founds a sanctuary, and although we'd all like to live forever, it doesn't happen, and there's no plan for what happens next. And so that whole set of what we would call in charity capacity building world sustainability is the set of the biggest problems across, that runs the risk across sanctuaries. And many do really, really well. So the successful sanctuaries manage that super well. And then there are a number of sanctuaries that don't and understate what it takes to make one of these things work.
That makes sense. In terms of animal welfare, what is giving you the most hope right now?
It's people's attitudes. You know, it's the best of times and sometimes the worst of times. You know, some animals in agriculture, animals in laboratories are treated in horrific ways by, and many other environments as well, entertainment and so on, in terrible ways by our species. On the other hand, there's an increasing number of people who care about animals and recognize and acknowledge that each animal matters. And from our point of view around sanctuary, while we are strong on the importance of conservation, we're also, and we start with, that each animal matters, each life matters. You save a life, you save the world. And more people are feeling that and seeing that. And so that gives us all hope. Technology, social media, as in all things, can be a good thing or a bad thing. It allows negative messages and fake sanctuaries to get the word out. It also allows people that are doing good work to be seen by a broader public and by funders, and that gives us great hope and great cause.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've seen some of the most change happen because of these videos, these secretive videos that organizations like PETA put out of how animals actually do get treated in animal agriculture and other places, right?
You know, I fully agree. The folks that do undercover work, and I have beyond the greatest respect for them, and, you know, because of what they do, it's so important, it's dangerous, and I don't have the personal courage to do that, so I think I particularly respect people that are able to do that, you know, both to be in there undercover and to see every day what happens. And I think that changes a lot of hearts and minds. And sometimes seeing the worst of the worst and then seeing video or pics of how animals live when they've been rescued, the before and after, I think that particularly helps.
I agree. I think that's really powerful. So, Alan, where do you think the animal sanctuary movement is heading right now?
So that's it's a big question, an important question. It's growing. There's more and more sanctuaries, you know, both in the U.S. and developed countries and developing countries. It really is species or taxa specific. And so in the U.S., for example, there's particularly a rapid growth of farm animal sanctuaries and equine sanctuaries, and so that's a good thing, as long as they are established with eyes wide open and all of the business sustainability principles I talked about are thought about ahead of time, and people go in with a lot of planning and resources to make it a go and make it work well. So there are more and more sanctuaries for many taxa. You know, another positive development over the past number of years are the development of alliances amongst sanctuaries for a particular species. So GFAS has had the honor of helping a bit with a growing big cat sanctuary alliance in the States. There's a North American Primate Sanctuary Association that may happen on the farm animal side. It's people that run sanctuaries come together beyond informally and beyond GFAS to within species to work together, learn from each other, share resources. So that's a real plus as well. You know, as I said, for GFAS, our role is to both accredit high quality and to help support and build to get to the highest quality. So the movement is growing, and I think also, and I may be projecting some now, but there are more and more people that recognize and acknowledge that saving a life really is saving the world. And building a sanctuary, as long as one does it for the animals, for the right reason, for each animal, is a wonderful and noble thing to do. And so there's it's very hard work. There's growth. There are many sanctuaries that fail. So one needs to get into this with the right resources and the right plan and not do it as a solo act. And while so many animals suffer from various bad behavior from our species, whether they are horses or farm animals or wildlife of various sorts, the need for sanctuary grows.
Mm-hmm. Does GFAS get involved at all when sanctuaries build coalitions to actually change legislation to improve conditions?
I've personally been involved in legislation and advocacy wearing other hats. So when I worked for the World Animal Protection, I worked for Farm Sanctuary, and have also done some work as an individual with colleagues around regulation and legislation, and also changing hearts and minds, which is particularly important. GFAS, for us to stick to our mission. So we support folks that do that work, and we appreciate and encourage it. Again, with the key GFAS principle that what matters first and foremost is what happens for the animals on sanctuary. And GFAS itself is, from time to time, get involved in some advocacy efforts as part of a coalition, but it's not. So, for example, we right now are talking with a number of other international groups about appropriate guidelines for rescued wildlife under the CITES Treaty. And we're delighted to be a part of that effort.
The what treaty?
Sorry, CITES, C-I-T-E-S. It's a global treaty on protecting wildlife.
Okay.
So when it's a treaty on endangered species. And so when endangered species are rescued, there's an international treaty on how they should be handled. And so we've recently been involved in discussion about furthering the regulations around which entities qualify as sanctuary for rescued endangered wildlife. So we'll be involved in those sorts of advocacy efforts as part of a coalition. We and we're careful and thoughtful in terms of which ones we choose to be part of, not because we don't appreciate the value of that, but because, like any charity, one has to be careful about, you know, sticking to one's core competency, and we're about the sanctuaries themselves and their own capacity building.
Wonderful. Thank you for your great and awesome work. Alan Kornberg, thank you so much for your time today. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. And I want to encourage them to go to your website at sanctuaryfederation.org. Did I get that right?
You did indeed. Thanks a bunch, Yolanda. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuaries for Animals. And I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon. And I'm looking forward to talking with you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye now.